Say the top of Samachayamun Aleph. Amar Abaye. So Abaye, it's 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down. Amar Abaye. Haiman Damasik Zuzay Derevita Bechabre. Someone who is a creditor to his friend, but the creditor in the sense that he is demanding payment from his friend of interest payments. Ka'asle Chite Arba Giroye Bezuza. And the wheat is selling at 4 units, or whatever units this is, or 4 pieces to a zuz, b'shuka. V'yayv le'iu chamisha. And instead pays him 5 to the zuz. Right? So, if this person is trying to collect his interest, this creditor is trying to get his interest, the interest that's owed to him is a zuz. Right? And now, he comes in for collection, a collection of his zuz, which is, again, inappropriate, illegal, according to the Torah, to collect interest. But it's right that he comes in when he collects. Now, the debtor, when he's paying him, not only pays him what in the marketplace would have been a zuz, but it gives him an additional, like, a bonus amount that he's giving him. Instead of just the 4 to the zuz, he's giving him 5 to the zuz.
Can you also give him the zuz and also?
No. The zuz is what he owes him for rebeat. That is the rebeat. And instead of it, he gives him 5.
Right,
5 weeks.
He gave him more than a zuz worth.
Technically, right. Ki mafkina mine. Now, according to this, according to Rabbi Lazar, who says that we take away from Ribut Tutsa, we go and demand him to pay it back, and we take it out of his hands. Arba mafkina mine. We only take 4 back. Idach ozulehu dekamoz legabe. The other one was a bonus, meaning that technically all he collected for interest was 4, because he's collecting a zuz worth of interest. When the debtor pays him 5 instead of 4, that means that he discounted to him the last 5th, or gave it to him as a gift, almost the 5th piece of the wheat. It's really the 4 that he needs, because that's he's supposed to get paid the zuz. So when you go take the interest payment away from him, the interest payment was 1 zuz. So we take away the 4 pieces, and the last 5th one he can keep. All right, so now, that's the Abaye's position. Rava Amar, Chamisha Mafkina Mine. Now, that we take all 5 back from him. The only reason he ended up with 5 was because he's collecting an interest payment. The individual would not have handed him in a separate transaction, would have not handed him one piece of wheat. The reason he's handing him this unit of wheat with the other 4 is because he's paying him as part of a interest payment. And therefore, even though it exceeds the chitim, now will exceed the value of the zuz that he's collecting for the interest, but since they were given in Torah tribit, they were given as a unit towards payment of a rebit, right? That will be, we will therefore look at them as a unit and remove them from him as a unit. Now the Gemara says Abaye. Amar Abaye, again, another case similar to this.
Can we assume that
the Torah it's clear, he's collecting rebit, so it has to be rebit d'oraisa. According to Rabbi Lazar, yeah. All the cases of the Rabbanan are not explicit interest. They're all interest that is subsumed in a market change in pricing and all that sort of stuff. The fact that he's collecting explicit interest almost will definitely make it d'oraisa. All right, now, Rabbi, Haimon do Masik Arba Zuze Durita Bechabre. So now instead of trying to collect 1 zuz of interest, he's trying to collect 4 zuz of interest. So instead of paying him the 4 zuz, he hands him his coat. Right? He hands him his shirt, coat. When we go and collect the interest from him, or we go remove the interest from his possession, right? We leave the transaction in place. We say there was a transaction here, which is that basically with the interest payment that he owed, he purchased this glima. So now when we go and take away the interest payment from him, we take away the cash value of the interest that he took. We don't remove the glima itself from him. We let him keep the glima and just say you owe 4 zuz back. You've got to replace the 4 zuz that you collected as interest payment. Rabbi Amar, glima mafkina mimi. Rabbi says, no, there is no transaction. The transaction failed in its entirety. Why? Because my timer. Kehechet lo limru, glima de michsei, vikoi, glima de revitu. That coat that he's wearing is a coat of interest, meaning that he collected it or he accepted it as a payment of interest. People will not know that he paid back the cash value of the interest on the side. And now people are going to think he's walking around with a interest-earned coat. So we say, don't do that. We say, take the coat back. Remove any chashash, any possibility that people think that he's collected interest on this loan.
It's a
zero. Sounds similar. Right. Oh, this guy, throughout Shas, we have problems of Maris Ayin and things where people would think. I think here the Chachamim want to protect. I think this is a little different, where I think the Chachamim here wanted to have it be that people don't think that Beis Din is not enforcing or taking back the interest payments. Because if it looks like they let him keep the glima, it's almost as if they are condoning this interest collection. So I think they want to make it clear that the interest is being taken back, and that people shouldn't think that they left it with him or they left the glima of interest with him. So I think that's more of the drive here to remove it from him.
Now, it says here that therefore if it's an object that's not easily recognizable.
Not misuyam, which we have by other gzela, right? So Amar Rava, Haiman the Masik, Tresar Zuze Derevita Bechabre. Person is collecting, he's a creditor for 12 zuz worth of interest, an interest payment of 12 zuz. Bechabre, Ba'agrele Chadzer Demitgara Ba'asara, Ba'ogreni Ale Betresar. So now, the debtor to fulfill the payment, right, basically says, listen, I will rent you out my property at, you know, no cost. Now the property, if the creditor did not take this property, the property would rent out in the market for 10 zuz. But the creditor decides to take it as the equivalent of 12 zuz. He says, I'm willing to hear it. That'll be the payment. The equivalent payment is that a month's rent on this property, that will suffice. So, kimaf ginen mine. Now, when we go to extract the cash from him, obviously we can't. In this case, it's not like a glima where you can go take the coat back, right? Or you can't go take the rental back. He lived there for that period of time. The only thing you can do is ask him to pay the cash value back. What cash value do we ask for him back? Do we ask for the cash value, meaning the interest payment that he was receiving this rental for? Is that what we ask for back? Or do we ask that back, the market value of what he gained from this interest payment, which would only be 10? So Rabba says, we take back the full 12. Even though technically, right, he only got value of 10, despite that we take back 12 because that was his claim, interest claim against him. Bakum dipte Ravina. He says, let him say, ki agro hochi, to have a comment starshali, right? The only reason that I allowed this to happen is because I was profiting. I was profiting in the interest payment. So I said, you know what? Instead of 12, I'll take 10's worth and I'll be happy with that interest payment because I'm profiting. All of it was profit to me. But now, hashtalokum starshali, over here now, I'm not profiting anymore. Why? Because the interest payment is being pulled away from me. Says kid agri kuliyamahu diagrina. Right? I would never accept this in payment or in lieu of the interest at 12, I've only done it at 10. Meaning that the true value of the underlying property that I'm renting is 10. Right? So if I am taking that, or I'm doing this favor to him to allow it to be worth 12 instead of 10, is when I was profiting. Now that you've removed all my profitability, how could you suggest that I would also take it at 12? Because the whole context in which I accepted it as 12 is now gone. And I really would only accept it as 10. So you should only take 10 away from me. So he says, Mishum Darmalei, Savaritz Bekabot? No. That's exactly the answer. The answer is no, that you accepted it. Once you've accepted it, then basically 10 equals 12. Right? Once you've come to that equation that 10 equals 12, we don't care anymore the context, because you've now given us, right, a value equation which says 10 equals 12, and we come to remove it from you, we're going to take away that 12 that you supposedly said the 10 was equal to 10. And therefore, we don't pay attention to the fact of the context of, because it was an interest collection, that's why he gave him the benefit of allowing it to be worth 12. But we say, no, it's the full amount of the 12. That's what he calls it. He calls it 12 now. That's the value he's assigning to it. We're going to remove 12 from him in order to take back the interest payment. So in all these cases, Rav is consistent, right? In these three cases, Rav is consistent to say that we remove everything. I mean, in the first case, he says we remove the full 5 that he discounted against him instead of the 4. Right? Over in the middle case, we say we remove the glima, not the cash value of the glima, but the cash value of the interest payment. And over here, he says, remove the full cash value of what he supposedly received for his interest payment, and not the true underlying value of the property. So Rabbi every time says we take the full amount, the most that we can, back in terms of the interest payment. Right now, new Mishnah. Marbim al eschar, vein marbim al mecher. One is permitted to, right, be in excess on the rental, but not on excess in terms of a sale. Kate said, and Gemara will explain this, explain what the difference and what the issues are here. Hasachir, hiskir lo et chatzero, right, he rented out to him his chatzer, v'amarlo, im mi achshav ata noten li, right, if you give it to me from today, harilucha b'eser sla'im l'shana, right, that's the upfront discount. If you pay for the whole year upfront, I'll give it for you 10 sla'im for the year. If you rent it on a month-to-month basis, seller l'chodesh, right? Common business practices. You want to rent month-to-month, it's a seller per month. You want to buy upfront, you want to rent for the whole year, 10 seller. Now the Gemara says, mutar, Mishnah says it's totally fine. Machar lo et sadeu. On the other hand, if he sells him the field, v'amalo imach shabbat onitainli, if you pay me right now, ariyesho chab elef zuz. 1,000 zuz, today you can have the whole field. V'im legoren, but if you defer payment until the goren, until the harvest time, then b'shnei masar mana asur. Then he says 1,200. 1,200 at the goren, 1,000 today. So basically, it's the same idea that I'm giving you a discount up front if you pay up front, right? And the back end, it'll be more expensive. So the same thing as the rental. Gemara, the Mishnah clearly differentiates between the two and says by the rental it's mutar, and by the mecher it is asur. Gemara wants to know right away why. Mishnah Resha, Mishnah Sefer. What's the difference between these two cases in the Mishnah? Remember, it's Rabbi of Rabbi Yosef, who've been right, coming into a lot now, that they, the Amrei Tavayu, that they both say, Schirut, Eino Mishtalemet El Basuf. The important factor here is that Schirut is only paid at the end. Right? So now, if Schirut is only paid at the end, right, then you are not, there is no monetary obligation that is generated at the point in time where the rental is taking place. The obligation to pay the money is only after, right, the schirut is actually taking place. So if I look at the seller lechodesh, v'hai, came into lo mata zimne lemikvah, since here the person who's collecting the money, who's the person collecting the money? The rent, right, the landlord who's renting it out. Lava garnatale, right, he's, it's not payment, the deferral or the 12 that he charges, the 12 seller lechodesh, is not because he really owed 10 up front. And instead of paying 10 up front, he's allowing him to pay 12 over the year. And what you're really doing is lending him 10 sela over the year. And instead of paying him 10, he's getting 12 back. Why? Because you don't owe the rental payment until the conclusion up front, in the beginning of the year. Do you owe him anything? No. When you agree to the rental, you owe him zero. Now, as you rent month to month, you come into owing him a sela. And you pay him a sela each month. You're paying exactly what you owe him at that point in time. He has lent you no money.
Why do we say
right, well, there's only two possible opinions. Tosfos points that over here. Right, there are only two possible opinions over here, which is that Skira Elam Mishtomet Basof, Skrut only paid at the end. And the other opinion, which we've seen before, is that it's Mitkilat Sof. But Tosfos says over here that according to both opinions, it's Eino Mishtalemet El Basof. It's still only paid at the end. Even according to the one who says that schirut is mitzchilat sof, right, it is from beginning to end you earn the schirut, it's still only paid at the end. That's number one. The only question is if it becomes a loan in between, which will have an afkamina for kiddushin. And second is, even according to both opinions, a poel can walk away in the middle. And a poel can stop, a schir yom has the ability to walk away whenever he wants in the middle of his work. So, what about the fact that it's schirut only mishtavet el basof? He says that becomes the sof. When he decides that he's done, that's the sof, and that's when he becomes owed his money. Right.
That's just the obligation comes by bed or just allowance at the end.
It depends how he's rented. If he rents for a year, it'll only come at the end of the year. If he rents for a month, it'll come month to month, the obligation. Right, so now, based on that, Meshavahu Dehacha Shavya, right, that this is what it's worth. Meaning it's really worth a seller per month. And therefore, when you go and charge 12, you're not really lending him money and then saying, listen, you got to pay me more back at the end. Rather, you're saying to him, the value of the schirut is a seller per month. Now, if you want to pay up front, I will give you a discount. Giving you a discount is not a problem of agarnatar. That is a business decision. It's a simple business decision. I'm not lending you money, and therefore, I'm charging you interest for that. No. The simple fact is that 12 payments came along. That would be ikar adin, 12 payments. He owes you nothing up front. You're not lending him money. You're not doing him any favors. Now, the favor that you are doing him is if he, up front, he wants to pay you the money, you're discounting him the value up front, not charging him from tanat maot. You're not charging him for the privilege of borrowing the money.
I'm not sure why, I don't understand why it makes a difference whether the rent is supposed to be paid at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. Because either way, let's say proper conduct were to pay the rent at the beginning of the month. So why couldn't you still say that he's giving him a discount, or
if
for paying all the months up front?
If the schedule should be paid, he rents for a year. There are two ways to rent for a year. You can rent monthly for a year, or you can rent one shot for a month. Now, if he owes the money up front, say he's taking out a year lease, and he should have to pay the money today.
He's talking about not it being due at the end of each month. It's right. It being due at the end of
the year. Year or beginning of the year, okay? So if he had to pay the money at the end, the beginning of the year, then he owes him 10 sela today. And the fact that he allows him to pay it month to month, he's actually delaying his ability to pay, and then he's charging interest for the delay. What the Gemara is saying is that since the money's really not owed until the end, right, then he doesn't, he's not really giving him any benefit by allowing him to defer that payment. The fact that he says miachshav means from now, he's discounting the rental, he's discounting the fact to him, not charging him for the interest. So Tzvi, if he was to take a year, a rental for a year, right, and he says, I'm only chayav to pay the rental at the end of the year, right, so or really, it's worth 10, because he's willing to give it to him 10 today, for a whole year. So now, what is he saying to him? Listen, you rent out for a year, and the payment's due now. Pay me my 10 sela up front, that's when it's due. So now instead he says, listen, I can't pay you the telsel up front. I'll pay you monthly, I'll pay you sela each month, and we'll get to 12 by the end. So now what's he really paying him? He's paying interest for the fact that he didn't charge him the 10 up front. So that would be considered hamtanat ma'ot, and it wouldn't work. What the Gemara is saying is that's not true, because schirut is only due at the end of the term. Schirut is only due at the end of the term. I owe you nothing today on day one. I only owe you your money at the end. So the fact that I am giving you money today, or you're not taking money from me today, is not a privilege. You're giving me no privilege. You're saying, oh, don't pay today. Pay at the end. And pay at the end is what I'm due halachically to pay at the end. The fact that I pay you up front is a decision that I'm making to get a discount, not a decision where you're lending me money to late until the end of the end of the period. And that's why the Gemara's after. That is not true by Mechem. Seifa. Kevin Dizvini Ninu. Since it's a transaction, Ubal Mishmel Demei Akshav Miakshav. He has to pay the money today. When you buy something, you're expected to pay for the transaction immediately. Hilkach agar nachar lehu v'asur. Over here, what's the reason that I'm charging you $1,200 in the back end instead of $1,000 up front? It's because you didn't pay me the payment at the time you should have. When we did the transaction, you owe me $1,000 today. Alright, now if you owe me $1,000 today, and instead I say to you, pay me the going, you pay $1,200, what am I charging you? I'm charging you interest for not giving me the money up front. The transaction's over at the moment we have it today. There's no transaction in the back end because the transaction's done. Everything becomes a loan at that point. If you don't pay me the full amount today, then whatever you're deferring in payment is a deferred payment. A deferred payment means a loan. Deferred payment is a loan, then when I charge you $1,200 in the back end, I'm charging you interest more than you should have paid today. Alright, so Amar Rava, Daku Bar Rabbanan, the Rabbanan went out and searched Bahamil to see if this is really true, that Schirut is Mishtalemet Basof. This differentiation is all premised on the fact that Schirut is Mishtalemet Basof. If it's Mishtalemet Basof, then there's no lending going on over here. V'ukma Akra, they found a Pasuk that says, Kaschir Shana Bishana. Right, that he'll be like a worker, a laborer for Shana to Shana, year to year. Schirut Shoshana Zu, Ene Mishtalemet Lushana Acheret. Schirut for this year is only paid in the Bishana in the following year. So what does that indicate to you? That Schirut is only paid at the end of the term, not at the beginning of the term. It's paid at the end of the term. Again, if you then pay up front, you're not doing something Mikar Adin. You're paying him and you're demanding a discount up front. But anybody else has to pay the full amount in the back end, hasn't borrowed money, they are getting what they are entitled to, Mikar Alacha. If the Goren, Bishne Masar, Mane Asur. If he says at the back end, right, then it's Asur. Now, we're going to come into a concept here. Amrav Nachman, Tarsha Shari. And this concept called a Tarsha is a individual who basically says that if you pay up front, right, it'll be cheaper. If you wait in the back end, then it'll be more expensive. So now, this Tarsha is Muteret. So now, of course, but where are we going to ask from? We're going to ask from our Mishnah. This is exactly our Mishnah. When you have a transaction of a land transaction, if you pay today, that's got to be the true value of the land. And if you pay later on, you basically lent him money and now you're charging him more. So why isn't that true here? So Tarsha Shari. Eitvei Rami Bar Chamla Rav Nachman. Rami La Rav Lukva Bar Chamla Rav Nachman. Im Megorin V'shnei Masar Maneh Asur. Our Mishnah is against what you're just stating over here, Rav Nachman. Amalai Hotam Katzle Hachalo Katzle. This is an important factor, that over there in the Mishnah, he quantifies the difference. He says, if you pay today, 1,000. You pay at the Goren, 1,200. What is he saying, basically? He is saying the field is worth 1,000. He says, you pay in the Goren, it's 1,200. Why? Because even though the transaction is today, you're not paying me, you're delaying payment. Delaying payment, right, is the 1,200. If I only give him one price, I say, the field for you in the Goren, 1,200. So now what I'm saying, basically, is the field is worth 1,200, and that's it. The Goren, at the Goren, you can buy it at 1,200. That's it. You pay me at the Goren, it's worth 1,200. What I haven't done is assigned a value for the waiting, or for the fact that you're not paying me today.
But then if he says, it's worth, I mean, you pay me, or it costs the 1,200, if you pay me now up front, it'll be 1,000.
But then it'll be a problem. As soon as he defines it, it'll be a problem. That's exactly what the answer here is. is that if you do not differentiate between payment today and payment later, then you're not charging anything for the delay of payment.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not charging more for the delay. I'm giving you the discount for paying up front.
How do we ever end up with a payment of $1,000 then? Somebody's got to mention it.
Oh, so that's the case of the property is asur. That's our Mishnah. The Mishnah, where he mentions it, it's asur. If he says $1,000 or $1,200, then it's asur. Why? Because the transaction's today. You pay it today, it's worth $1,000. You pay it in, well, twice, you're paying me money for delaying the payment. Over here, Rav Nachman says, no, take the produce today, you pay me $1,200 in the back end, that's it. I mean, really, it's produce here, it's not land. It says, you buy the chitah from me today, you buy it today, just pay me $1,200 at the government, that's it. He does not offer him a price today. By not offering a price today, he's basically saying, it's worth $1,200, and you pay me in the government, that's fine. That's when you pay me, it's worth $1,200.
So what are we basically, so what's Tarjan was saying? We know that the current market price.
Oh, so that's a big thing. Tosfos asks you a question on the previous, it's actually on the previous daf. Tosfos says, if there is a clear market price for the item, it's as if he said it. Tosfos makes that differentiation everywhere, that this only can be true in cases where there's no clear market price for the item. If there is a clear market price today, then it's $1,000, right? And you say, okay, I'm not going to mention $1,000, just $1,200 in the go, right? It's clear that you're saying $1,000 today or $1,200 in the going because there's a clear market for the item today. If there is, only when there is no clear market price for the item today can you say $1,200 in the going and not mention a price today, then we don't say that there's a schar hamtana to ma'ot.
If you're saying $1,200 in the going, even though that's a higher price?
No, it's not a higher price. That's the only price he's giving.
But it is higher than the
we don't know any other price. We know no other price.
And if he then said, will you let me pay now for a lower price? Are you allowed to accept that?
He can accept it, but then he can't accept the $1,200 anymore.
Okay. Right. If he agrees that $1,000 would be acceptable at any point.
Right. Then the $1,200 is out. Exactly. That's every reason. Now, Amar Papa, Tarsha Didi Shari. My Tarsha is really good. So his Tarsha, again, Rapapa was a beer maker. He was a date beer maker. And he basically did the same thing. He was selling date beer forward. He says, you can buy it today, you can take it today, possession of the date beer today, but and you'll pay me at the growing, you'll pay me later on. And obviously it was a higher price. My time, scharai lopasit, it's chichrai. My beer, my date beer doesn't go bad. For me to keep the date beer until the goren, it's no problem, because it's me, I'm indifferent, it doesn't go bad. Number one, zuzu lo tzrichna, I don't need any cash because I'm rich. So I don't need cash. So you're paying me. I don't need the fact that I'm delaying receipt of cash. I'm not demanding any more payment for that because I don't really care. If you pay me today, you pay me in 3 months. It's all the same to me. I don't need the money right away. Anahu dekavidna milsa gabidukech. I'm actually just doing him a favor. He's not doing me a favor. I'm doing him a favor, and that's it. So that when I'm doing the favor, so I could just charge him whatever I want. I mean, I'm charging in the back end.
I'm not trying to gain anything from it.
I'm just doing him a favor and saying, listen, you can pay at the go-in and not pay now. That's all I'm doing. That's all I'm offering him, and that's it. That's the price.
Why am I charging the higher price then?
Right, obviously. Because I could receive, at the time of the go-in, I would receive more. That's clear. The clear that everybody, and that's an underlying assumption all the Gemara is here, that if I sell it at the time that it's harvested versus if I sell it at when it goes to market, the market price is always going to be higher than the go-in. So all I'm doing is selling it in the forward price, which again is a problem of avat ribit min derabanan, because I'm not explicitly charging him, you know, extra money, but I'm charging him what the go-in price is. We're agreeing to be supplying. I'm agreeing to supply it to him at what will be the market price when it's going to come to the market. Now, the reason I'm allowed to do this again is because there's no reason for me to charge for hamtanat ma'ot. I don't care about the money today versus later on. I'm charging you, that's the price I'm willing to sell it at. You don't want to buy it? I'll keep it in my house and I'll wait and I'll sell it later in the market. That's what Rav Papa is saying. So I'm really Rav Sheshe Braid Rav Yidi, the Rav Papa. My chazi mar, the ka'azlet batar didach. Why are you looking at this all from your perspective? Zil batar didu. Look at it from the buyer's perspective. Listen to me. If I was a buyer, right, what would I do? If I was a buyer and I didn't need this, I didn't need it right now, what would I do? I'd buy it, right? D'ilu habalu zuze. Had he had money today, habu shakli kihashka. He would have bought it at today's market. Now, for us, why is lokeach not buying it at today's price? You think he's, he also wants to pay a higher price later on? No. Hashka leilu zuze. He has no money today, and he needs the date beer today. So what does he do? Shaklei kiyukrei lekamei, and therefore he buys it at the future higher price. Why is he doing that? Because he has no cash today. He has no cash today. He is borrowing money, basically, from Rava. Rava is giving him credit, right? I mean, Rav Papa, thank you. He's giving him credit, and he's giving him credit in order that he could sell the beer in between and then go and pay him back in the back end. But basically, he's giving him credit. So even though from a papa's perspective, he's indifferent between holding on to the beer and giving to the beer here and to having him pay the higher price, Rabbi says, I'm totally indifferent. So to me, it's not a loan. But from the perspective of the buyer, it is credit. Because had he had cash, it is a loan. Right. From the perspective of the buyer, if I had cash, he would of course would buy it today at the lower price. He would never want to expend the cash, have take it, and then pay a higher price later on. The only reason he's doing it is because he's out of cash. That means that's called Skar Hamtanat Ma'ot. So, alright, so Amram Chama, Tarsha Didi, Vadai Shari. Right, your Klopas doesn't work so well, but my Tarsha, that definitely works. What is that? So now he had a different, he was a Mocher Prakmatya, he was a merchant that used to bring in, produce to sell, he used to bring in whatever type of item, merchandise that he wanted to sell. Now, he used to give it on consignment to these other individuals, these merchants, and they used to go out, travel out, and sell it for him. Now, when they would sell it for him, they'd sell it at a higher price because they're going to bring it to the shuk. Meaning that if he was to sell it here on the spot, when he brings it in, say he brings it into the port, he brings all his stuff into the port, if he sells it right here at the port, it's going to be a lower price. So what he does is he basically gives his merchandise to all these sellers, these salespeople, and they go out and take it to all the different shukim, and they sell it out at the shuk for a higher price or the shuk price. Now, the reason is because he says, I accept all responsibility for the item until it reaches the shuk. It remains in my possession until it reaches the shuk. So now, when they go and sell it in the shuk and then receive cash, at what point do they become debtors to Rav Chama? They're not indebted to him from the moment they take the sfora. When they take possession of the merchandise, they're not indebted to him. Why? Because it remains in his possession. He's giving to them on consignment. It's still his. When do they become indebted to him? Only after the sale. After the sale they become indebted to him, that means that their debt only starts from the moment they've sold it. Well, they sold it, that's the higher price already. That higher price, now they owe him the money, and they're responsible now to bring him back the money. Wait. Why? So, my time up.
How's the consignment get paid? Is he getting paid separately?
Good. So, how do these people make money? Right? How are they making money? So, my time up. Nechelu deliki b'shute, they're happy to have it in my possession. The whole hechotka azle, shafkilu mechsa v'nachot hushuka. It's an interesting concept. He says that they are happy to have it in my possession because everywhere they go, the shuk has a rule that they won't open the shuk until they show up, number one. And number two is they don't charge the tax. So now, I don't know why Rav Chama had this dispensation. I don't know, because he was a big merchant, he had a dispensation that people would live, or because it was a Talmid Chacham and he was putter from tax. But for whatever reason, Rav Chama was putter from tax and had this benefit that people would wait from him. For whatever reason, that he had Shem Gadol, he was a Talmid Chacham as a merchant. And therefore, the salespeople were gaining the benefit of his big name. So the fact that he still owned it gave them a benefit. Now, how do they make money? They make money because on the way back, they take the cash and they buy merchandise. And they basically buy merchandise and they sell it on the way back till they reach him. So they buy merchandise once they reach the shuk, they sell their stuff, buy other merchandise. Then on the way back, they sell that merchandise off. Until they reach Rav Chama. By the time they come to Rav Chama, they've liquidated all the new merchandise they buy, and then they give him his cash, and they keep the profits from what they made on the way home. Okay, that's the deal here. And Rav Chama says that's clearly not Haskar Hamtanat Ma'ot, because they only become debtors to me from the moment that the merchandise sold at the higher price. So I'm not gaining anything from them, and I'm allowing them to make money on the way back. Now, make money.
But he's not paying anything. He's just getting, all they're getting out of this is that they have money that belongs that they owe him, but they have meanwhile.
Right. So your question, very good. So Tosfos asks your question. Tosfos says that's not enough. You have, now they owe Rav Chama money.
Right.
Okay, now, what is the benefit that they get? They get to use the money on the way back. Yeah. That's how they make their money. But Rav Chama has never paid them for their services of bringing the merchandise from the ship out to the sales place and then selling it. Because at that point, he keeps all the money. He keeps all the profit. When did he pay them for their services? And you say he doesn't pay them for their services, then in the end, what's happening? He's not paying them for the services because of the loan.
For the money.
Right, for the use of the money, but basically because he's lending them money. He's saying that I don't have to pay you for your services. So Tosfos says that is the payment. What's the payment? Nakidu shuka and the mechas. The fact that they let off the taxes for them on the way back, and they hold up the shuk for them, is an additional benefit that they would not have without Rabbi Chanan. Because it's under his name on the way back.
In fact, they wait for him for the shuk. It's Rabbi Chanan's benefit.
On the way, it's his benefit. On the way back, it's their benefit. That benefit on the way back is their wages for taking care of Rabbi Chanan. Now it says, if he didn't have that, won't work. Because otherwise, then he's not paying them, and by not paying them, that's basically saying, I'm lending you money, not paying you. That's an equivalent of an interest payment. Right, so now...
I mean, the interest would be the fact that they did the work for free.
Right. Now, Hilchasuk Rav Chama, the Gemara concludes, the halacha is like Rav Chama over here. The Hilchasuk Rabbi Elazar, the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, the Hilchasuk Rabbi Yanai, Dami Mali Hein, Mali Demehem. So Hilchasuk Rav Chama is the Tarsha Rav Chama right here, that this is considered to be fine. This type of transaction is fine, it's not considered it's Karam Tanat Maot. Number one. Number two, halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, that by ribit ktsutza, we do go and force the creditor to cough up the interest and pay it back. Number three, the halacha is like Rabbi Yanai, demali hein, mali demehem, we're different between in-kind payments and cash payments. That we saw as machlokes between Rav and Rabbi Yanai, the halacha is like Rabbi Yanai. What the Gemara does not address here is Rav Nachman. Right, that's what Tosfos jumps on over here. Is the halacha like Rav Nachman or not? All we've addressed so far is that the halacha is like Rav Chama. Now, there were three opinions here. There was Rav Nachman said Tarsha, then there was Rav Papa said Tarsha Didi, and then there's Rav Nachman who said Tarsha Didi Vadai Vadai. When Rav Chama came and spoke about his Tarsha, he said his as opposed to Rav Papa's, or did he say his as opposed to Rav Papa and Rav Nachman. So that would make a difference in the halacha, whether Rav Nachman stands the halacha or not. That's what Tosfos jumps on. Look at the top Tosfos there. It says, Remain a right time, the Hilchus and Namik Rav Nachman and Tarsha. The halacha is like Rav Nachman and Tarsha. Vahad and Akad Hocha. So we skip down a line there. Hilchasuk Rav Chama lo atel shminen el lafuke de Rav Papa. The halacha is like Rav Chama and not like Rav Papa. Behind no time to Rav Nachman lo shari el bitlo katz. Because Rav Nachman's case is only where you don't explicitly state the pricing. About Rav Papa, Rav Chama, I ruafilu bekatz. Rav Chama and Rav Papa's cases are even when there's a declared price for today and a declared price later on. Okshashar kavua havi kakatz. This does is again Lashita Do. Again, he says this on Samakum on Bet. Does Lashita Do is when there's an open market price, it's as if you're saying that is the price for it. That's it. So Rav Papa and Rav Nachman comes and says, the only time you can do such a transaction is where it's not clear what the price is today, and you only give one price, and that's the future price. That's allowed. Then Rav Papa comes along and says, I can do it even when the price is known today. Even when there's an open price today, or I'm giving you a price today, I can still do it, because I have this agreement where there's no benefit to me. I don't need to do this. So therefore, there's no benefit. And then Rav Chama comes along and says, no, I have a way to do it, because I delay, I keep ownership until it's sold in the back end. The Gemara says, Rav Chama's way works, Rav Papa's way does not work. So that would be the difference. The Gemara passes the halacha like Rav Chama, when there is katz, when there's a price today and a price in the future, not like Rav Papa. But when there is no price today, then they will paskin even like Rav Nachman, that it is shari. Right now, new Mishnah. Machar lo et asadeh, natan lo mikzat damim. He sells him a field and he only gives him a down payment up front. V'amar lo imatai shetirtzeh have ma'ot betulat shelcha. Whenever you want, come give me the rest of the money and take your field. Asur. Hilvo al sadehu. He lent him money and took the field as a mashkon. V'amar lo imatai notin li mikan vat shloshanim. If you pay me within the next 3 years, hariyi shali. Then it's mine. Hariyi shalom. Right, that will work. This is what Baitus Ben Zonim used to do. We saw Baitus Ben Zonim earlier in the Gemara that he used to do these deals where they basically had a piece of property that was a mashkom, and then it would revert to the creditor if the debtor didn't show up with the money. Gemara says, "Mio chelperot." In these instances, who owns the fruit? Who owns the production of the land? Ravuna Amar mocher o chelperot, that the seller eats the perot over here. The debtor basically would eat the perot. We put them in escrow. We put the payroll into escrow. Velo pligate. This is, they're not arguing. Ha lechi maitit kani? Ha damar lechi maitit kani me'achshav. Depends on when the transaction is complete. They're very important, and we're going to go through this in a second, that there are actually four possibilities of how the transaction can be worded. But it depends on when the buyer comes into possession of the property. If you say to the buyer, when you complete payment, you will own the property, then who can eat the payroll all along? The mocher, the seller. Why? Because the property does not become the income to the ownership of the buyer until full payment is made. And therefore, it really is his until he brings the final payment. On the other hand, if you say when you bring the final payment, l'mafreya, the sale was done from the day one, basically means that you have a down payment, and then the rest I'm offering to you as a loan until you come and pay it. Once you paid it off, you get the property from day one. Then when I eat the payroll, What happens? I'm eating your peirot, because when you come and make the final payment, when did you own the land from? You owned it from day one. And when I'm eating your peirot, what I'm basically doing is charging you interest for delaying the payment. So now there are two outcomes. If the guy shows up with all the money, who's going to own the peirot? Right? The buyer. If the guy never shows up with the rest of the money, who owns the peirot? The mocher. So in that case, you put into escrow. Michel Shino, don't really wait to figure out who it really belongs to. So Tanya Rav Safa Beripi, to pay Rav Chia, Pamim Shishneim Mutarim. Some cases, both parties are mutar. Pamim Shishneim Asurim. Sometimes both parties are asur. Pamim Shal Mocher Mutar Valokech Asur. Sometimes Mocher is mutar and Alokech is asur. Pamim Shal Kech Mutar Mocher Asur. Right, that's the statement. Ani Rava Batrei. So Rava came to explain this. We have this statement from Tani Rav Chia, and we have no idea what it means. So Rava comes, I'll explain it to you. Pamim Shishneim Mutarim. When are both mutar? Darmalei. That when the transaction is worded this way, which is, whatever money you pay, you will own, then they're both mutar. In the part that you paid for already, that's your property as a buyer. You can keep the party that you made a payment. Say you paid for half. You gave him five, it was 1,000 zuz for the whole field. He pays him 500. He says, whatever you pay for, you own. That means that half the field now belongs to the buyer, and half the field still belongs to the seller. So the seller can eat the fruits on his half, and the buyer can eat the fruits on his half, because each of them owns that entirely. When are they both not permitted? When he says, when you go and bring me the rest of the money, you own it from today. Then neither of them are allowed to eat the fruits. Why not? Because there are two possibilities of an outcome here. One possibility is that he brings the rest of the money. If he brings the rest of the money, the buyer owned it from day one. That means that the mocher can eat the peirot, because if he eats the peirot, it's as if he's charging interest for the delay of loan payment. On the other hand, right, what happens if the buyer never shows up with the rest of the money? If the buyer never shows up with the rest of the money, what happens now? The sale does not go through, and the money, the original down payment, gets returned to the buyer. So who got lent money now? Wait. Who was lent any money? Who's lent money now? The seller was lent money by the buyer, because the down payment is refunded. So he basically borrowed money from the buyer, and now he's giving it back. So if the lokeach, if the buyer ate fruits during that time, the buyer is charging interest for lending him the down payment in the interim. So neither the mocher nor the lokeach can eat payroll, because each side, each outcome would end up with one of them being charging interest. If the sale goes through, then it would be interest if the mocher ate it. If the sale does not go through, right, then it would be interest, right, if the lokeach ate it. So we say, don't eat it, put it into escrow, and we figure it out afterwards.
Wait, but once he pays part of the money, right, doesn't he already gain possession of the
sefet? That depends how it's worded. They're saying over here, it depends how it's worded. Technically, if there was a kinyan without any words said, yes, it's over. The transaction is over at that point. But if you simply say that you're not going to be konen until you give the rest of the money, it won't work. You can make whatever tznai you want, right, inside of a transaction. It's just if you don't say anything, then the kinyan will work immediately. Right now, pamim shemocher mutar v'lokeach asur, the times the mocher can eat and the lokeach cannot, darmalei chi might eat koni. He says, when you fulfill your payments, when you finish paying for the field, then you will take possession of it. So in that instance, right, then the mocher can eat the fruits. Why? Because lokeach does not own the property until he brings the final payment. Now, what happens if the lokeach doesn't bring the final payment? Okay, no problem, right? Then we will just, he'll give a refund of his money, but there's no loan over here. The lokeach can't eat. Why can't the lokeach eat? Because if he doesn't bring the rest of the money, then he refunds him the down payment, and it was a loan to him. The down payment was a loan, and the lokeach eats. That would be charging interest for the down payment. So the mocher can eat, but the lokeach cannot eat in this case. Right now, the last one is, pamim shel lokeach mutar mocher asur, zamar leik neim achshav, zay lehavei halva gabech. He says, listen, all right, you are koneh from now, everything, you own the field entirely from now. The rest of the money, that's a loan. I'm selling you the rest on credit. Basically, you pay me cash for a part, and the rest is on credit. So the field is sold and completely and entirely, that's what you're asking. The field is sold completely day one. It's gone. It's sold. I owe you money. I have a separate issue, which is now I owe you money. I have a debt obligation that's outstanding to you. The debt obligation is not what is going to make the field or make the transaction be complete, because the transaction is complete day one. But you owe me money. So now, in this instance, who can eat fruits? Right? Who can eat fruits? Well, okay, I can eat fruits. Why? He owns the field in its entirety. You can eat the fruits, no problem. Now, the rest, he owes money to the seller. Right, if he owes money to the seller cannot eat fruits, because that would be charging interest for the money that the lokeach owes him. So therefore, the mocher cannot eat the fruits. I say, now, matano shnei masurim, right, the one who says that both of them are sur, Amar Rav Huna, brother of Shua, the lok Rabbi Yehuda. It must be he's not like Rabbi Yehuda. What did we say about Rabbi Yehuda before? Rabbi Yehuda says, tzarachad berit mutar. One sided rebbeit is mutar. So let's think about that case. For shnehem asurim, there are two outcomes, right? It's a tree, right? There's two outcomes. Either the buyer shows up with the rest of the money and the transaction goes through, right? Or the buyer does not show up with the money and the transaction does not go through. Now, in each of these instances, right? For instance, say the mocher ate the peirot. The mocher eats the fruits. Now, if the transaction goes through, then the mocher ate the peirot inappropriately, because the transaction goes through, it means that it was the lokeach's property, and the skaram tanat ma'ot, it was the loan that basically allowed him to eat the fruits, and then he's charging interest for that loan, for the deferral of that payment. So that's a sur. But what happens if the transaction fails? The transaction fails, the mocher ate fruits appropriately. It was fine for him. So that's Rabbi Yehuda, tzarachet beribit. There are two outcomes. Only one of them is a problematic outcome. Same thing from the lokeach's perspective. From the lokeach's perspective, if the lokeach eats fruits, right, if he eats the fruits. Now, if the transaction is complete, right, then is it okay? Sure. He owned the property because the Andy Bud got it and he owned it from up front. If the transaction fails, then there's a problem with eating the fruits. Why? Because his down payment became a loan and now he's eating fruits because of the money he lent him as the down payment. So there again, only one of the two outcomes is a problem of ribbit. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that should be mutar legamre. It should be no problem. Why? Because tzarachet beribit. So what Rav Huna is saying basically is that Rav Huna Bereid Rav Shua is saying that Rav Yehuda is not the author of this brisa. Why? Because if he was the author of the brisa, it would not be shnei masurim, it would be shnei mutarim. So that's all he's saying. Now,
wouldn't he also disagree with all the other cases? Because most of them it was a question of whether or not it would be rebbeit.
So right, if he owned it or not.
Right. The other case is Rashi addresses your problem. Rashi addresses your issue that.
He says,
over there, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees. The hatam vada ikar ribit. In those cases, there will definitely be ribit. The chamalei the chimaitik kani in lo achshav batum. He has no ownership in it today. But filu gamar yukach peri dehash to ribitain. It's low because there's no meachshav since the transaction is not retroactive to the beginning. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's only one outcome here. That's an outcome of interest. So the second, other cases, you have to think through it, but the other cases, right, there is only one possibility. There is interest being charged over here. Right now, mashkano bayit, mashkano sadeh. Yeah, he gives him a collateral, a sadeh or a house as collateral. Barmalo, glikishitirtseh lamochram, lotim karem yaladi bidamim halalu. He says, listen, I have a first right of refusal here, which is that they are mashkon to me. Now, if you sell these items, I want first right of refusal to buy them, basically in exchange for the debt obligation. Now, what is it? We're going to set a price to now. We're going to set the price today and say the price is the loan that I have outstanding. So the loan I have outstanding, which is below market, I will say, I'll take whatever loan outstanding, that will become the payment price for this item. So he says, if you want, don't sell them, I will leave it in malo, whatever that price is, then it's asur. Bishov yehen mutar. But if he says at market, then it's mutar to do it.
So what I can cheap or less, I haven't got the money.
So Rashi says, to avoid that problem, Rashi says over here, that the money, he actually offers him a little more than the loan. He owns like a zuz or a shekel above the loan amount. Why? So that there will be some money payment, and that will be a kinyan on the mashkon. Otherwise, mashkon with this loan plus a little more money, and then I get it at below market. So why am I getting it at below market? Because I lent you the money. That's clear that I lent you money until now. Now, if I say you must sell it to me at market price, then I've gained no benefit. All I'm asking for is a first right of refusal. But that's not a problem. That's not a real benefit. We would call it as an interest payment because in the end, you're going to pay a market price for the mashkon. That is permitted.
As much as the right of first refusal is not considered interest.
Right. The right of refusal is not interest, but the right of refusal where you make it a below market transaction, right, then it'll be interest. So now again, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Shua, we're going to have this statement out many times over and over again. Rav Shua, the local Rav Yehuda. This, again, is not like Rav Yehuda. Why? The Rav Yehuda, Amar Tzarech HaBaribit Mutar. Why? Because there are two possible outcomes over here. What are the two possible outcomes? He wants to sell it. He wants to sell it, then he's got to sell it to you below market. But if he never decides to sell it, there'll never be ribbit. Why? Because then the object will remain as a mashkon, right? And there'll never be a transaction, below market transaction. So there are two outcomes here. One outcome is rebbeit, one outcome is not rebbeit. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that is mutar. So obviously this halacha is not according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, machalo bayit, machalo sadeh, he sells him a house, he sells him a field. Amalok, likishiyuluch lima'ot hechzirum li. He says, when I come up with the money, I want you to give him back to me. There it's asur. Why? Because basically what he's doing is he's selling him the object, and the individual is not paying for it. He's selling it to him on credit. It says, Reuven selling to Shimon a house on credit. Now Shimon says, listen, when I get money, I want to buy back the house from you. So basically, what is this? This is a wrapped up loan. Reuven's lending him money. Shimon pays him back the money and gets his house back. What did Reuven get in the interim? He got the use of the house. So the use of the house is interest on the loan that he gave him. So that's not allowed. But on the other hand, when you have money, mutar. Right? If when he says, when I come up with money, I will return them to you, mutar. I mean, that's from the buyer's standpoint. The buyer says, when you come up with money, I'll give them to you. That is mutar. So now, first of all, Rimar says, Ma'atana, who is the Tana? Amar Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Shua d'lo Rav Yehuda. Again, this is not like Rav Yehuda. Why? Rav Yehuda, damar tzara chabririt, mutar. It should be mutar. Why is it mutar? Because, what are the two possibilities over here? He shows up with the cash, and he gets his property back. In that case, there will be interest. What happens if he never shows up with the cash? If he never shows up with the cash, the sale will be complete, and Reuven would have owned the property and be able to use it forever. There'd be no interest. So again, according to Rav Yehuda, there are two outcomes. One outcome has interest, one outcome doesn't have interest, so it should be mutar. So obviously, Rav Yehuda is not the author of this statement. Number two, Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. Why when the seller says, when I show up the money, I'm going to buy it back, is it asur? But yet, when the buyer says, when you show up the money, then it is mutar. Why should it make a difference who's giving it back? So Amar Rava, Seifa Darmalei Midate. It's a very important statement. He says, the Seifa is a case where he says, I will make the decision. When you bring the money back, it'll be in my decision whether I give it back to you or not. He's not guaranteeing to him that he will give it back to him. In the case where the seller says, you must give it back to me when I show up with the money, that's a sur. Why? Because it's obviously going to be rebit when he shows up with the money. On the other hand, when the buyer says to him, listen, when you show up the money, I'll think about selling it back to you. I'll consider selling it back to you. That case, it's clearly, the fact that he does not guarantee he'll give it back to him, that means that we have two separate transactions. There was a sale up front, and then the buyer later on can make a decision to sell it back to the mocher. But it's a separate transaction. Why? Because he's not obligated to do it. He's not obligated to do it. There's no limit here. It was a sale and it's a sale.
You give me 100,000, I give you 100, and say here's another 10, because I decided to do it.
No, that's a little bit. That's a loan. There was no loan over here.
You mean here because it's two.
There's no loan. There was a transaction, and then another transaction. There's no loan. If it's done as a loan, it's always a sur. Here, the clear thing is, Mekach Lomemka. He sold them up front, and the buyer at the back end can make a decision to sell back to Reuven like any other time. He can sell it to the third party, he can sell it to Reuven. That's his decision. As long as he's not obligated to do it, that's fine. That's the difference over here. Right now, how Gavra. The individual sold property to his friend without achrayut, without recourse. He saw that the buyer was upset. The buyer was upset because he really wanted recourse. He was afraid of not having recourse. So I'm like, the seller says to him, why are you so upset? If they come and take it away from you, I'll tell you. I'll give you shufra, shivcha, upeira. I'll give you from my Eden property. I'll pay you all the shevach, all the improvements in the property, upeira, and all the production of the property. Amar Meimar, Tume Milum Ba'al Mabahu. Oh, he's selling him the Brooklyn Bridge. He's going hot air. What he's saying now is just trying to make him feel better, but has no bearing on the transaction. So Amar Vashda Meimar Time Amai. Why is the reason? Came to Lokeach Baile Tanuye. Because Lokeach, the buyer, should have made this a condition up front. V'achar mocher kamatne. On the other hand, who's making the condition over here? Who's offering him this? It's the mocher. Amar, it's tumei miltahu. So that you're saying because it's the mocher offering him this, rather than the lokeach demanding it, that's the problem. Elamatnita diktani. Our maisa that he says over here, that kashiyulecha ma'ot, achzir lecha mutar, that when the buyer offers him, kashiyulecha ma'ot, when you have money, I'll give it back to you. To mocher hu debay leibnuye. Who should have made this condition? The mocher. Right, therefore, mocher lo atne, right? Over here, the mocher lo atne. What? No, the mocher, the seller should make this condition. Mocher lo atne, lokeach kamatne. Right, so that, it says, we said over there, I mean, maishna resha, maishna seifa. Over there, we wanted to explain, what was the difference between when the seller made the condition and the buyer made the condition? So we said over there, what was the condition? Rama Rava, seifa damalei midate. Rava explained the difference between that in the seifa, it was the buyer's option. It wasn't that he said he was obligated to do it. Time of Damalemi Date. Halo Amalemi Date Lo. So he says that doesn't work. Based on what you're saying, Amrina Tume Milmo. So why don't we say, based on your explanation, that. Right, we don't need Midate. That was your explanation. Whoever has the obligation, right, to make the condition, right, then if he makes it, then it has strength, or then it means something. That when the other party makes it, it's meaningless. So over here also, when the buyer should have made the condition of Achrayut, then he doesn't. When the Mocher offers it to him, it's meaningless. Also over here. Over here, who should have made the condition to offer the buyback? Right? The mocher should demand the buyback option. When the buyer offers the buyback option, it should be meaningless. But then why does Robach come to the explanation that because the buyer says it's at my option? No, it should just be the fact that the buyer even offers this option. Even he says, yeah, I'll give it back to you. It should be meaningless because it should be too
many. Oh,
it's a very good. The Tosfos asked you a question, but the Gemara doesn't answer that. He says, no, you're right. He says, I'm like that. Why don't we say that? Armalei, not sick and mand armalei mitate yitmar. That's the answer. The answer is you're right.
That's exactly it.
When the buyer comes and says, yeah, I'll give it back to you later on, it means at my option because he cannot be obligated because it's too many armalei. Tosfos says what you're saying here. You see that Tosfos says that dafka. If you look at the top Tosfos here on the Yomo, dafka hafak shivar amdu asof liknot shlo b'achrayut. That's only when they've come to a final agreement, they shook hands on the fact that the agreement is without achrayut. Then the mocher shows up and says, hey, you know what, I'll give you achrayut. Then it's not considered to be real. But, and we know that the buyer is going to take it anyway, because he already agreed to take it without achrayut. But on the other hand, at the beginning of the negotiations, the mocher says, I'll give you achrayut, then of course we say that that's real. Right, that was part of the deal up front. We only say that there's a problem once it's shaped and on the deal. And then the buyer says, you know, he sees that the buyer's done and the deal's over, and he sees he's worrying, so the mocher offers him something. When he offers him, I think that's not part of the deal anymore. That's afterwards, it's Ptume Milma Milta Vyama. I will stop here.